So you're an engineer by training, and you worked for the railroad company, right?
Right.
Can you explain that, like what you actually did? Because you did that for 12 years, right?
Yeah. So I started while I was in college, like working for them part time. But what I did was design rail terminals. It was pretty simple as far as engineering, because you're not building buildings or anything. But it was just a lot of work that was needed to, like, when after a derailment, you know, realigning the track, making sure that the trains can run, because they run at a high velocity on these two little bitty rails, and you got hundreds of thousands of tons moving at 60, 70 miles an hour. So you had to make sure that everything was designed, the curvature was right, and all that kind of stuff.
And where were you doing this at?
I started off working for CN Railroad. So I was covering between Chicago and Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Wow. Because we've seen in, you know, the past few months, these railroad systems, the subway systems, especially in New York, where we're from, that are completely outdated. They're running on systems that are from like 1910.
Right.
And we're like, how is this even possible?
Yeah, technology has not changed, and they do the minimum maintenance to keep it up. So I was on like the freight side, so it wasn't any passenger rail.
Okay.
So a lot of it's behind the scenes, you know, that they didn't get a lot of exposure unless there's a big derailment somewhere.
Yeah. So you merchandise and product is moving through your lines.
Right. Exactly. Okay. And like 80% of anything that moves somewhere in the United States, if it comes in on a cargo ship from China or somewhere, it moves by rail at some point in time. It only moves by truck when it gets closer to its destination.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how big of a business trains are. Because the vast majority of the country probably don't ride trains. Like, we're kind of jaded because we're from New York. So we're used to riding trains, subways and trains. It's pretty normal.
Yeah.
But most of America, they don't really ride trains like that anymore. So people might not fully understand that trains is a big business. And even if you don't ride it, like you said, a lot of cargo rides on trains.
Yeah, and what people don't realize is that the railroad is basically what helped build the West. Like, when everybody went from the East Coast to the West Coast, everything was moving by rail. It was small trains back then.
The Great Expansion, right?
Yeah, the Great Expansion. Yeah, everything was done by rail. And people always wonder why the railroad's in the hood. That wasn't always the hood. That's what the first area that was settled in every small town, because you had to bring everything in by rail to set up, you know, the infrastructure build a city hall, to build small buildings. Everything came in by rail.
So one of your job not titles, but responsibilities is design. Are you designing the actual tracks? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, designing the actual tracks.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, that's what I did. Now, I did that for the first 4 years I worked for the railroad. But like I said, I wanted to get out of engineering. So, and once I started getting into reading the real estate and entrepreneurship stuff, I realized I needed to learn more about business. So I kind of took that opportunity while I had the corporate blanket over me to try to get into other departments. So I went into operations. So I ran freight terminals for like 4 years. And that was crazy experience, because I'm like 24, 25 managing guys that's 40, 50, making twice as much money as me. You know, them union guys make over 100 grand a year. I was making like 50, 60. So I learned a lot about managing people in that role. And then I got out of that and I got into the marketing and sales side, and I was lucky enough to get into industrial products, which is chemicals and oil and gas stuff. So I'm sitting in rooms with all these decision makers at Exxon, Chevron, Phillips 66, these type companies. And man, it just opened my eyes to a whole different world. They speak a different language. You learn a lot more about the economy and infrastructure, everything.
Like, what's one of the things you learned when you was working on that side of the fence?
Man, I just learned how money really works and how people really make decisions, because energy runs the country. You know what I mean? Like, without coal, without oil, without gasoline, everything shuts down. And so they know that they basically have a monopoly on everything, you know. And the profit margins are crazy in that world.
What's the profit margins?
300% on a lot of stuff.
Wow.
On like gas and oil and stuff.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this then. A lot of people are saying that we should move away from that, going to solar energy, wind energy, electric energy. You're an engineer and you worked in the space. Is that realistic? And what's your thoughts on that? Like, as a long term, can we continue the way we're going now, or do we have to make a change?
I mean, eventually there will have to be a change, because there's a limited amount of fossil fuels out there. So we're going to have to find other energy sources that we can use that are renewable. So it's definitely feasible. It's definitely plausible. And like wind, sunlight, water, that stuff's not going to go away. So we're always going to have that. But you just have these big institutions that are making so much money off of the fossil fuel based energy sector that they're not going to just give up their position.
Yeah, and they do a lot of lobbying in Washington.
That's what I was about to say. That's something that we don't really understand, but that lobbying is powerful. That's why all the legislation really happens. And I don't care who you vote for. It's somebody with money in the behind the scenes in Washington taking them out to dinner, whining and dining them, and that's when the real decisions are made.
They got
to
make sure they keep their money going. Yeah,
I remember when Hillary Clinton was running for president versus Trump, I think. Yeah, so they were saying, I think Chase, Chase put like $10 million into Hillary's campaign, but they put $9 million into Trump's campaign. So no matter who won, they won.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Like, right. I mean, that's what people don't fully understand either. It's like you're playing a political game based off of emotion, but these people are playing a political game based off of strategy. It's two different things.
Yeah, they're playing chess.
Yeah. They're going to give money to Republicans, Democrats, and independents, because at the end of the day, they need what they need done, and money talks.
And whoever's the decision maker, either red or blue, is going to help them.
Right. Yeah.
So you started a business, the E-Rail Commerce. Can you talk about that?
So basically, something else I like to teach entrepreneurs, especially the ones that's coming out of the corporate world, everybody feels like I got to create something new. Like I got to get into an industry that I see everybody else doing. Right. But what I realized is like, man, if this company is paying me $100,000 a year to do this job, there has to be a smaller business out there somewhere that needs these same services, need the same skill set. And I can just go out and provide the service for them. And instead of being their employee, I become their consultant. So that's what E-Rail Commerce is. I took all that experience I had, all those connections I had with the railroad, all these oil and gas companies, and I found all these smaller companies that need or want to get a contract with an Exxon, because Exxon has over 10,000 rail cars. Every one of those cars has to be maintained, has to be repainted, has to be cleaned, has to be maintenance done to them. They have to store them when they're not using them. They got to park them somewhere. So what I do is I help all those companies that provide those services get in the door with Exxon, get the contract, and then they perform all the work, and I just get commissions off of the deals.
Wow.
So you're like the relationship man.
I'm basically brokering. Basically brokering, and I have everything set up with my clients to where whatever contract I help them get, I get paid.
But so E-Rail is not the only form of consultation that you're providing, right? Don't you have a few other consultation things that you do?
Well, I mean, in general, I just try to help entrepreneurs get started, you know, because I mean, I was so lost when I was trying to get out of the work world. And I was like, man, nobody was really here to guide me and teach me. So I use my social media platform, and, you know, I use that network and that audience as my way to give back. You know, so anybody that has help, wants help with it, getting started in entrepreneurship, I try to teach them the basics, the kind of stuff we're talking about now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I get them as far as I can, and then I try to network with someone that's actually in their field and try to get them to get under that person.
You know, so you're providing the mentorship by consultant.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Consulting is something that we also haven't spoke about yet in this podcast, but it's extremely important, and it's a very profitable business as well.
It is.
Consultants, you have consultants in school industry, you have consultants in political industry, you have consultants in all kinds of stuff, right? Can you explain the importance, a lot of times, especially for small business owners, this is the problem with small business owners as compared to big business. They have small way of thinking. They don't understand the power of consulting. They don't understand the power of marketing. They don't understand. They just want to just do the work. It's like running on a treadmill. You can only get so far, right? When you get enough wind behind you, now you can start to fly. So when you talk about the power of consulting, like what can somebody get value out of hiring the right consultant?
So there's only two ways you're going to learn. You're either going to bump your head and you're going to lose time and money, or you're gonna pay for the knowledge, period. There's no other way you're gonna learn, right? So you hire a consultant. The consultant is someone that's an expert in that field, that's already got experience doing what you're trying to do, or they can help you with a particular area of the business that you can't fulfill. Like if you have a great product, but you don't know how to get it in front of enough people, you need a marketing consultant to come in and help you get it in front of the right people. And so it's basically a way for you to, you can add a whole department to your business without actually having to hire an employee. It's a consultant, you know. That consultant can either be somebody that's paid by the hour, or it could be somebody that I always recommend you get performance-based consultants, which means they work off a commission. So if they don't produce for you, they're not gonna
make any money.
Right, so that gives them a vested reason to get in there and work hard and get something done. And on the flip side of that, that, like you said, that's a very lucrative business too, because it's a business where it doesn't require you have to invest a lot. You can work from home and be a consultant, and people are actually paying you just for the knowledge that you already have. You know, so you can take that corporate experience. You could, man, you could have been flipping burgers at McDonald's for 5 years. But guess what skill set you got? You know what it takes to onboard a new employee. So you can go to other small restaurants and say, here's the McDonald's model. I'm going to teach you how to run the McDonald's model for your restaurant.
And that's something that anybody can do. Like, as you're saying it, I'm thinking of, like, especially in the education field and especially in the restaurant field as well. It's like, people always try to figure out how can they make passive income, right? And they don't realize that they have a skill set already. They're just overlooking it, right? They're not maximizing their potential.
Well, this is one of the things, you talk about multiple streams of income, that they say the average millionaire has seven streams of income. That doesn't mean he has seven jobs or even seven businesses. It's that they're maximizing their skills, maybe one or two businesses. So as you said, you can be a teacher, right? But you're an expert in that field. If you're a really good teacher, now you can be a consultant to school districts, write curriculum, things of that nature, right? And that's something that anybody can do, as Troy said. Even if you're still an employee, you can be an entrepreneur and create your own consulting business.
And the amount of time, it doesn't require as much, right? You can say, these are my hours. You dictate the hours and you dictate the fees.
Yeah, and a lot of times you're helping different customers and clients with the same problem.
Exactly.
So you already know it, like in and out, you know?
For your consulting business, how did you market yourself to your customers or clients?
Man, the most powerful tool I use is LinkedIn.
Okay.
And what I liked about LinkedIn is because when you put yourself on there as a business owner, you give yourself whatever title you want, you know? So I gave my, it's me and one partner, but my title is Executive VP. So that puts you in a whole different arena.
When you get on there, look at you like, oh,
it's all perception.
That's a fact.
So then when I go to, when I see a company that I'm trying to get a connection with, and I go to the CEO and request to connect with them, they be like, oh, it's another executive that wants to connect with
me. Yeah, we got an exec that wants to meet you.
Yeah, and that's all it is positioning. And it's all about, you know, what you post. I repost a lot of Wall Street Journal type articles that are related to the industry. Any type of insight that I get from anybody else that's in the industry, I'll make a post about that. So then you kind of position yourself as a subject matter expert. So then what happens is eventually enough people are watching your posts to where when they have a problem, they come to you instead of you having to go out and ask for business. And another great thing I like about LinkedIn is because you can type in any job title you want. So I'm in supply chain, right? I type in director of supply chain, LinkedIn is gonna give me a list of people with that title. So all I do is go connect, you know? And then that builds your audience because people go to check you out to see who is this that's asking to link with me. And then my network on LinkedIn is like 17,000. It's all industrial products, supply chain people from all these big companies.
Yeah, you got
that's a lot.
Yeah,
of,
that's a lot.
But
man,
the LinkedIn, you got to accept every single person, right?
Yeah, but the person has to approve the connection. But if your page is set up to where it looks like, oh, this is somebody that I might want in my network, then you're good. And that's the whole purpose of, you know, making sure that you set yourself up right on there with the right titles. Right.
Was it in mail, right? They send you in mails or you
both? I guess I'm both. Yeah, I met with a guy. Matter of fact, he flew in from Arkansas last week because he's working with a private development group that does industrial development, and they're looking for new locations to build new rail terminals. And that's part of my job when I work in the railroad, so that's part of my consulting too. So he literally reached out to me because he had been seeing me make these posts on LinkedIn about railroad development and railroad terminals. So this guy literally flew in for the day just for that meeting.
Wow. So you are using your resources efficiently. And like a lot of times people don't realize that. Like they're just on LinkedIn or they're just on Facebook just to put pictures up, not networking and not realizing how powerful a tool they have at their fingertips.
Well, LinkedIn is only for networking, but I actually gotta do a better job on LinkedIn because I don't know, I just don't feel too comfortable with it. I feel like it's kind of boring.
I think I have a page too.
It is boring, but it's like Facebook, but it's for business only. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's powerful.
So yeah, it is. I mean, you would be surprised the people that don't have a lot of LinkedIn followers that are like powerful people. Like, I mean, like producers, executive producers at these big stations, they may have 500, 1,000 connections, and you go request it and it's approved the next day, you know? But it's like a back door to get the connection that usually you have to call a corporate headquarters and talk to an administrative person and ask to schedule time to meet this person. You just go to LinkedIn and find them.
So when you need, it's like getting you past all those steps,
exactly.
Right? Like
the gatekeepers.
Yeah, the gatekeepers.
You bypass all the gatekeepers.
If the person's on LinkedIn.
If they're on there.
But everybody's on LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is the one, is the most powerful search thing too, because like, mm-hmm. so when you search somebody's name on Google, the first thing that comes up is LinkedIn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's like the first thing. It's like mm-hmm. It's like your online resume pretty mm-hmm. much.
It is.
And so I don't know how they work that with the algorithm, but mm-hmm. they always are on the top of your thing. So yeah. you kind of have to have a LinkedIn page mm-hmm. if you're doing anything in business. Mm-hmm. It's like almost mandatory.
Yeah, I agree.
I got to update mine.
So. Yeah, man.
All right. So that was good info.